Two balls, two strikes, two outs. Paul Skeens, the wind, the pitch. He struck him out with 102. He decides to wait to the end for his fastest pitch of the day. The incredible Paul Skeens marches off into the dugout to a standing ovation.
So right after the Skeens game, I was looking around for other sports to watch, and I found the Hungary-Scotland soccer game, where Hungary scored a goal in the 99th minute to push them through to the next round of the Euros. And the crowd goes absolutely wild. Fans trying to get onto the field, beers thrown into the air. I'm pretty sure I saw people making love to one another in the stands. And sometimes there's going to be that catharsis, that release, that unbelievable jolt of emotion. And it was something to behold. I might tweet the video out. Just the crowd going absolutely buck wild. And then sometimes there's a moment in sports where all you can do is giggle. That's what I found myself doing when Paul Skeens threw 102 on his final pitch. I laughed out loud, Dorn. It wasn't a fist bump. It wasn't a yeah. It was a laugh. And then they cut to Paul Skeens walking off the mound, and he's laughing.
Yep.
And Joe Block had a line on the TV side. I'm sorry, Mr. Jackson. Paul Skeens is for real, and he's so good that I think a lot of people had that same reaction. You just laughed. 98 pitches. It was warm. His 98th pitch was the hardest pitch he threw. And so we can do the negative thing, and we will do the negative thing. There's a lot of negatives to take away from this weekend series against the Tampa Bay Rays. But the positive is that guy is so good, he makes me giggle, Doran.
Yeah, he made me smirk, and I think I smirked the same time when they cut to him, and he was smirking walking off the mound. The thing that's positive for me, Crowley, is that he can fight. He can fight. The first pitch he threw in the game was what?
Dong.
Gone. And he kept his head, and he stayed in it, and he fought back and became himself again. That usually is demoralizing for young pitchers or even young players in any sport if you get just taken. You know, I mean, that first time you throw the ball and you watch it and it hits that foul pole and it's a home run, there's better chances of a lot of players going down, spiraling down,
yes,
and not having a great outing. But he fought back. He stayed in it. He stayed true to himself. And he showed that he has a lot of, you know what, to him.
Chutzpah.
Yep.
He got that chutzpah.
Yeah, the chutzpah.
According to Mad Dog Russo. Man, that's well said, because, and I don't mean to talk junk on guys, but I feel like if Quinn Priester gives up a home run on the first pitch, he's going in the tank.
Uh-huh.
I feel like early career Mitch Keller gives up a home run, he's going in the tank. And it's not just Skeens that has that trait. It's Jared Jones, too. Jared Jones plunks a guy in the first inning on Friday night, and then he hits a guy in the face with 100 miles an hour. He could not locate the fastball in the first inning. He hits a guy in the face. He could have killed him. The trainer comes out waving, hey, let's go. This guy's face exploded because Jared Jones hit a guy with 100 miles an hour. And then what does Jared Jones do? That doesn't rattle him.
Uh-huh.
He settles down. He goes 7 innings and was really good. The Pirates have two pitchers who are 22 years old that do not get rattled. Their stuff is great. 98, 99, 100 miles an hour from Jones. Same thing with Skeens and his wide array of pitches. But you're right, man. The demeanor from these guys and their ability to stay with it and then seemingly get better as the start goes on, that's the kind of you-know-what you can't teach. And so Skeens, after that tough first inning, and he was dancing through the raindrops early. 7 innings, 6 hits, 1 earned, 8 strikeouts, and they let him throw 98 pitches. I didn't think he'd go back out there for the 7th. I'm happy he did. He's now 3rd in the league in ERA with a 2.14 mark. He's gone 47 and a third innings, just given up 38 hits, 8 walks. So his whip is below 1. 46 base runners and 47 and a third innings, 61 strikeouts. But here's where the bad comes in, because he's been fabulous. The Pirates are 6-2 in Skeens' starts. They should be 8-0. The two losses that the Pirates have suffered when he's gone out there, He pitched 13 innings and gave up 2 runs combined in the games they lost. Mm. He has never left a game with the Pirates trailing.
Right.
So it's great that every time he goes out there, damn right, he's going to give you a chance to win. But that they've lost 2 of those games is frankly disastrous, Storm.
And you can almost feel it. Like, I can almost feel it. Like, as soon as he gets taken out, it's like, oh my gosh, here we go. Here we go. This is where they do it. This is where they do the thing. And there's a lot of people are like, why don't you leave him in? I mean, they're not going to. But you just, like, I just have that bad feeling every single time that they take him out, that something bad's going to happen. And they might lose the game. Now, I mean, the ratio of it, obviously, is good, but
6-2 is good.
Like, yesterday, I had that feeling. I was like, okay, like, they're probably going to lose.
And you know what, man? A lot of that has to do, and I feel like we're beating a dead horse when we talk about stuff like this. It's that Sunday lineup.
Uh-huh.
I'm not saying they lost the game before the game started, but here's the bottom of your lineup yesterday. Actually, here's your top 3. Key Brian Hayes in the leadoff spot, which Callis wanted to talk about. We'll get to. He's hitting 230. So Kutch doesn't play, or at least doesn't start, and that's the guy you turn to lead off?
Yeah.
You don't have a lot of good options, but he's hitting 230. Please, miss me with that. Then you got Brian Reynolds, who's hotter than hot, and then O'Neill Cruz. That's your top 3. But then, here's the rest of your lineup in a Skeens day, in a series that you, again, need to win because you're at home. Rowdy Tellez hits cleanup, and he's been better, but come on. Edward Olivares, 224. Jared Triolo, 209. Jack Sawinski, 170. Yasmani Grandal, 184. Michael A. Taylor, 192. Jason DeLay, 083. The bottom 6 hitters in the Pirates lineup yesterday are all at, below, or near the Mendoza line.
Mm-hmm.
So when they score 1 run and only get 3 hits in a game started by a pitcher who had a 5.42 ERA coming into the thing, unfortunately, you can't really be surprised. And what I'm wondering is, yeah, I get that McCutchen needs a day off every now and again. He's 37 years old. But why does Andrew McCutchen need to be on the bench the same day that Nick Gonzalez needs to be on the bench?
Right.
And he's fallen on harder times. He still hit some balls hard, and he's run into some bad luck. I know he's not the guy he was for most of his season so far, but Nick Gonzalez is a much better option than any of those guys and is always, weirdly, going to give you a professional at-bat. You don't need to be sitting Nick Gonzalez the same day that you sit Andrew McCutchen. And while Connor Joe has fallen on hard times, I still trust him to give you a better at-bat than Olivares, Triolo, Sawinski, Grandal, or Michael A. Taylor. All 3 of those guys sit at one time.
It's one thing to do that and for it to be a rhyme or reason and to have some legitimacy to it. And if you listen to Shelton after the game, like he doesn't give an explanation to why the process goes down that way. And this is not just the first time he's done this.
Nope.
He doesn't give an actual reason, but the kind of, you know, lame reason of those guys need rest.
Mm-hmm.
Like, but do they need rest at the same time? Like, how important is this to you?
They're going to be off on Thursday, by the way. Not playing a game on Thursday. They've had a lot of off days sprinkled in there. I'm with you, Doran. And to Callis's point, he texted us last night. He doesn't understand why Key Brian Hayes is leading off. I am with him. What I would do is if Andrew McCutchen needs a day off, he's been so good in the leadoff role, I would put Nick Gonzalez up there.
Yeah.
Like, when Kutch is off, Nick, you are our leadoff guy. I have no problem with your 37-year-old designated hitter needing days off every now and again. A couple off days a week. Maybe somewhat less is more with Andrew McCutchen. I'm fine with that. But then it should be Nick Gonzalez leading off. Or if it's not him, I would probably turn to Connor Joe in my leadoff spot, who has a higher batting average and on-base percentage than Key Brian Hayes. But all 3 being rested at the same time is absurd, and Brian Reynolds hasn't had a day off all year. Brian Reynolds, his off days, he's going to be the DH. He has started every single game. Why can Brian Reynolds start every single game, but your 25-year-old Nick Gonzalez can't?
Right.
That I don't understand. He's 25. Remember what it was like to be 25, Doran? Now you need an off day.
Yes.
At 25, there were no off days. You were living life to the to the extreme.
Yeah, just waking up, rolling out of bed, and just going.
Your back doesn't hurt when you wake up. Your hammies aren't hurting. My hammy I pulled this weekend playing wiffle ball. When you're 25 years old, the world is your oyster. And this is a professional athlete who works hard and takes care of himself. Nick Gonzalez doesn't need off days, first of all. And if he does, they should not be the same day that Andrew McCutchen takes off. Callis? Yes.
I was just going to put it in comparison. I'm 25, and that's...
You feel great.
I feel great. He should feel great, too.
I just don't understand it.
Me either.
And it'd be one thing, Doran, to your point, if you had an explanation from Derek Shelton. We don't get an explanation from Derek Shelton. Well, they just needed a day off. Again, they're off on Thursday. That's when Nick Gonzalez should be getting his days off, when the team is off.
Yes.
He's 25 years old. Brian Reynolds doesn't need off days. Ke'Bryan Hayes needs one every now and again because his back hurts, and that's a weird situation that they don't have any answers for, and you want to give him rest from time to time? Fair enough. Your catchers, I guess, are going to need time off. Day game after a night game. It's 98 degrees or whatever it was over the course of this series. Those things are real. I get that. But Nick Gonzalez does not need an off day. And you can't have that be the bottom six of your batting order when Paul Skeens is out on the mound, because you need to prioritize these Paul Skeens starts.
Yes.
Right?
Yes.
When he pitches, you need to win. When they lost game one of the series, I wasn't crestfallen. I was not overly concerned about it. It stunk. You had the bullpen game. It was the first time in four opportunities they didn't win the bullpen game. I felt good knowing that they could win the series because Jared Jones was going Friday and Paul, or on Saturday, and Paul Skeens was going on Sunday.
Yes.
I felt good about it. But Paul Skeens needed to throw a complete game shutout if they were going to win that game yesterday. And it's the second game of the homestand where the only run scored was from a Brian Reynolds solo home run.
Mm-hmm.
How can it be that you've got a guy on a 20-game hitting streak, and he's the only guy
The only one.
It's sickening.
I mean, they usually do score runs for Skeens, but the way that the lineup was constructed, I think that was a disservice to him.
Yep.
It was a slap in the face. And there was times if they cut to him in the dugout, he would be like, I mean, it'd be like 1-2-3, and he'd be right back out there, and he would put his head down, kind of shake it a
little. It's frustrating. It's got to
be frustrated, too.
He's used to playing for LSU, and he's used to, in his Pirates career, them scoring runs for him. And I don't blame Derek Shelton, actually, for pulling him out. You know, he threw 98 pitches. You're not going to send him back out there for the eighth inning. And you've got Colin Holderman, who up until yesterday had been perfect. I don't blame Colin Holderman. He was going to have an outing where he gave up runs. That's just the reality of the situation. You're going to pitch, you got 162 games. He's going to throw 60, 70 some odd innings. He's not going to be perfect in every inning. I don't mind the logic in going to him. I can't even criticize him, but it's 1-1 in the eighth. It can't be 1-1 in the eighth. And I think a lot of that had to do, most of it, in fact, had to do with the lineup construction by Derek Shelton. You can text us 412-928-9370, brought to you by Edgar Snyder & Associates, a personal injury law firm where they always say there's never a fee unless we get money for you. You can tweet us, brought to you by South Hills Kia and Peters Township, or visit them at southhillskia.net. But coming up next, we're going to get into not just this series and the Pirates' offensive woes, but the offensive woes of the Pirates overall. That's next. The Fan Morning Show is brought to you by Guardian Protection.
Pete Fairbanks, the Tampa Bay Rays, with an 0-2. Swing and a miss. Struck him out. And the Rays take the series. Final score, Tampa Bay 3, Pittsburgh 1.
The Pirates muster one run and three hits in a game started by a dude with a 5.42 ERA coming into the game. And Zangrilli tweeted this out. I hadn't even thought about it. But Pirates had a six-game homestand. They go 3-3. They could have won the most consecutive series at home since 2015, but they, well, lost yesterday. They scored 14 runs in six games. 14 runs, and they went 3-3. That's actually fairly impressive. That tells you how good of a pitching staff they have.
Mm-hmm.
14 runs in six games? They're back to their mid-April, early May offensive struggles, Storin. They have, and it's stat time, six losses this season where their starters have gone at least six innings and allowed one run or less. And Zangrilli tweeted this out and brought it up on the postgame show yesterday. He's going to join us at 9:35, by the way. The Pirates have 17 losses when their starting pitcher goes at least six innings. Now, we'll get into this more full form in the next segment. Offense around Major League Baseball is down, but the Pirates are among the worst offenses in a down league, and, well, that's just not going to be good enough, man.
I mean, it just really points in the one direction. You got to get something. I mean, you got to help this team out. And for them to stay afloat, like you're just saying, you know, with their pitching, you have to do something. You can't just sit on your hands. And I know that we're going to get into this today, and a lot of people spoke in the past couple of days, and you kind of get a sense of maybe where the direction might go, but maybe not. But, I mean, as the days go on, time's ticking. And you need to help this team out. So that's just kind of where it's at for them right now.
I look at the standings, and we do that every day. It's a nice exercise. And St. Louis, all of a sudden, they're 7-3 in their last 10. They've won three straight games. They're now 2.5 games up on the Pirates, and they're in that second wild card spot. The Pirates are 1.5 now behind the Padres, who are 41-41 in the third and final wild card spot. And when you look at all of the teams in the wild card race, the Pirates and Cardinals are tied with 307 runs scored. Colorado, way out of this thing, have scored 29 more runs than the Pirates. There's no team that's in it in the NL that has scored fewer runs than the Pirates. The Nationals' offense has been bad. They've scored more. The Reds' offense, they run, but not much else. They've scored more than the Pirates. All these teams have scored more runs than the Pirates. But then when you look at runs allowed, Doran, it's the Braves, it's the Reds, it's the Nationals, the Cardinals, and then the Pirates. And that's mostly because the bullpen was not good for the Pirates early in the season. They've mostly turned that around of late. I would say, you know, despite that, they're probably the best pitching staff among all of those pitching staffs vying for a wild card spot, which means it's just all going to waste. And even if they add, man, I think there's a chance that at the end of the year, they're like a game or two out of the wild card race, and you're going to look back and you're going to go, oh my God, what happened? Even if they add, here's where I am on all this. Even if they add, and they absolutely should, and I actually do think they will, and like you said, we'll get to that at 7 o'clock. The offseason was so bad that it might have cost them.
Mm-hmm.
Like Rowdy Tellez was a guy you thought would hit cleanup for you, and he stunk most
Michael
of the
A.
year.
Taylor.
Michael A. Taylor. Edward Olivares. These are guys that last year had pop. They get no pop. There's no pop. No pop, Doran.
No pop.
Where's the pop? And then you got Henry Davis, and I realize he's got the concussion, but he stunk before, and he stunk after, and he sent him down, and he's bad, and then he comes back, and he's bad. O'Neill Cruz, really good since May 1st. Still not enough power. Where are the bright spots? Kutch, Reynolds of late. Is that the list?
Just of late, yeah. Because, I mean, Gonzalez is not in there. Connor Joe's not in there.
That's fair. Nick Gonzalez deserves mentioning, but he of late has been not good.
Of late, that's it. Two guys.
Huh. So when you hear Bob Nutting say, and when you hear Ben Cherington say, that even though they're going to be active in looking for upgrades in the trade market, that they still need improvement from within, that's absolutely true. They need to make a deal. They need to make deals to augment this lineup so that they can score runs. They don't need to turn into the 27 Yankees, damn it. They just need to be average offensively, and I think they've got a really good chance to make the playoffs. But adding a bat or two isn't going to make up for Key Brian Hayes stinking. It's not going to make up for every single hole that you've got in the lineup.
Well, it might help, though, with the construction of the lineup and the pressure of having to be the guy. I don't know. Like, I'm trying to find the positives here. Like, maybe adding a bat or two and those guys coming in hot will bring Brian Hayes to a level where it's like, okay, I can just go out there and I can play almost freely and just go hit the ball.
That's true.
You know, hopefully that's the mindset. Like I'm grasping right now.
Yeah.
I am. So, yeah, I mean, and what other choice do you have? To sit on your hands? Because guys need to develop that are there right now. As who said that? Cherington or Nutting? One of them
both.
Said that. Both of them said that. But how do you expect that to happen? I mean, what are they just going to miraculously find it? Kind of like Brian Reynolds? Is that what you're hoping for?
That's what they're hoping.
Like, you're just hoping that they find it, right?
Yep. So here's what they've got that I think you can reasonably count on: Kutch, Reynolds, Cruz. And I'm not writing off Gonzalez at this point.
Mm-hmm.
Those are your four.
Mm-hmm.
That's it. You got four guys that you can really count on in a situation. It's two outs, guy on second base. I would have some level of faith that any of those four would get a hit. I've got no faith in anybody else. And so when you're looking at internal improvement, I think number one is Hayes, right? And then I think Sawinski. And then I think Henry Davis. Do you have faith in any of those three that they're going to get better?
No.
I have none in Sawinski.
None.
I have next to none in Henry Davis.
Correct.
When he comes back from his concussion, I listened to the Ben Cherington show yesterday. It sounds like they're going to send him on a lengthy rehab assignment.
Mm-hmm.
Like, he's going to be down there for a while, I think, Henry Davis is. So I don't have faith in either of those two guys. The only guy that I have some level of faith in is Key Brian Hayes, and I'm frankly not sure why. Because he's hit really well for 3 months of his major league career, and the rest of the time it's just been, eh.
Because that's the reason why, because there are times where if he does find it, he's on.
Yes.
And you're just hoping that happens soon.
And that was the case with Sawinski, too, but I'm just using our eyes. I don't purport to be a scout or anything like that. It just doesn't seem like he's even close. And then the catcher position, my God. When Joey Bart is ready, he's probably my everyday catcher.
Mm-hmm.
4 times out of 7, he's probably my catcher. Because at least he's shown the propensity to have some pop. But DeLay's hitting 083, Grandal's hitting 184. Oh, my God.
Oh, terrible. Terrible.
I might even consider trading for a catcher. Whether it's Stallings or Diaz from the Rockies, they're probably going to hold on to one. They'll probably trade another. I'd be looking to upgrade that position. And Diaz has more of a stick, whereas Stallings is more of the defensive stalwart, but I still think he'd bring more with the bat than any of these guys.
Mm-hmm.
But the point being, you can add, and they're going to add. But we say there's four guys that they count on. Let's say you add two more. All right, so now you got six guys that you count on. I actually do agree with them that most of the improvement has to come from within. And that's a scary thing because I don't see a lot of guys that are showing me they're getting closer. Like Jared Triola has been a disaster.
Disaster. It's a shame.
He was your starting second baseman coming into the year.
Shame.
So you're starting first baseman Tellez, you're starting second baseman Triolo, you're starting catcher, and your starting third baseman have all been below league average. And your center field position's been just dreadful. It's either Jack Sawinski or Michael A. Taylor who are playing center field for
automatic
you.
Automatic out.
Oh, it's an automatic out. And yesterday, man, we had the nice treat of both guys being penciled in the lineup at the same time. So people don't like to hear it. Well, they've got to improve from within. They absolutely do. You add a couple of hitters, you got six then. Six guys you can count on. And that's better than four, but it ain't great. Yikes. Anyway, coming up next, it's not just the Pirates who are struggling offensively. Doran brought this to my attention, and let me tell you, if we go back in time and compare some batting averages of years past to what we got going on in Major League Baseball right now, you want to puke. And so the question is why. We'll try to break that down for you when we come back. Fan Morning Show Twitter poll is brought to you by PJ Fitzpatrick Home Improvement. Trust PJ.com. Which Pirate most likely to turn it around? Key Brian Hayes, Jack Sawinski, or Henry Davis? I'm sure there'll be a lot of write-in votes that say none of them. And I'm sure Andy Haynes' name will be brought up frequently. And so we look here at Major League Baseball team hitting stats. The Pirates on the season, oh my God, are hitting .227 with an on-base percentage of .296. The only teams that have a worse overall batting average than your Pirates, the Mariners, the A's, and the woeful Chicago White Sox. But it's not just a Pirates problem. The league is not hitting. The league-wide MLB batting average in the year 2000 was .271. Only two of 30 teams have an average that high this year, the Rangers and the Braves. This season, 11 hitters are hitting .300. In 2002, just to pick a year, 35 guys were hitting .300.
Wow.
In 2003, 40 guys were hitting .300. In 1996, the league batting average was .277. Last year, it was .239. Teams just aren't hitting the baseball anymore. They're just not. In 1998, last one here, 49 guys hit .300 or better. This year, it's 11. What do we make of this?
I mean, thinking back, and I remember asking my buddy Brian Florio in like about 1998, like, what was the league, you know, at batting average? And he said around 300. I remember looking at him, and that's kind of what the barometer I've always used was that year. And to me, it's not like pitches have changed. Like the type of pitches, like there's some, you know, splinker and, you know, what Skeens is doing. I mean, some pitches have changed.
Sweeper
in the last 25 years. But to me, I think just more guys are throwing harder.
Yes.
And the game is just harder.
Yes.
I mean, I don't know what to make of it because the average guys in Major League Baseball is so low with 11 of being 300 or better. It has to be the pitching has gotten that much better.
I think it's the pitching has gotten better where everybody throws hard now.
But at the same time, it's not that much different. Or is it?
I think it's the specialization of pitching where you used to have starters routinely go 6, 7, 8, oh my gosh, even 9 innings. And now, if it's the 5th inning and there's 2 guys on and a lefty comes up, you're going to go to the bullpen and some lefty guy's going to come in from the pen and he's going to be throwing 101 miles an hour on the black. Like before you had Billy Wagner and he threw really hard and Nolan Ryan who threw really hard and Randy Johnson who threw really hard and Roger Clemens who threw really hard. Now it seems like every starter that you face is throwing 95 or above. And if not, you're a soft tosser. I remember when the Pirates got A.J. Burnett, and he averaged 92.8 miles an hour on his fastball, and it was one of the best marks in the league at 92.8 miles an hour on average. It's totally different now in terms of the velocity. I don't know why I'm getting so worked up about this. But then I also think there's an analytical element to it. Finally, the shifting is gone, and so you should be able to have a higher batting average because there's more grass out there, it would feel like. But analytically, everyone's trying to have launch angle.
Mm-hmm.
And it's all about exit velocity.
Mm-hmm.
And so guys are willing to strike out because they feel like when they make contact, it's going to go a lot further.
They're trying to make it too perfect. Like they're trying to get their perfect pitch instead of just playing baseball and hit the ball. I feel like that's a big difference. I feel like, 25 years ago, guys were like, okay, see ball, hit ball. And now it's like, okay, well, I gotta bop one to the right.
Yes.
I gotta bloop it over the shortstop. I gotta put it here. Maybe I can actually swing for this one. Like there's too much thinking.
It's now about let's hit the ball. It's three true outcomes: strikeouts, home runs, and walks. And so guys are going up there and they're thinking, I'm gonna look for the pitch that I can drive out of the ballpark. And if I don't get that pitch, I'm gonna try to draw a walk. But the deeper in the account it's going to get where these guys are throwing 95 to 102, you run the risk of striking out a lot more. When we were growing up, and Callis, you can speak to this as well, my coaches would try to tell, hit the ball where it's pitched.
Right.
If you get a ball on the outside corner, don't try to pull that thing. Don't try to yank that thing. Try to hit the ball where it's pitched. Easier said than done, no doubt.
Mm-hmm.
But the art of hitting has changed to where guys aren't looking on two strikes to go the other way. In two strike counts, you're still trying to hit the ball over the fence. That's not the way that the game was played for the most of the time the game's been played. Like, I was a 6th best player on my 6th grade team. John Wehner or Neil Walker or even Nicholas Harry Callis, I am not. But with two strikes, when I would get up there in 8th, 9th grade, I'm choking up on the bat. I'm trying to put the thing in play.
If I can just share an experience.
Of course.
Too. I think there's a trickle-down effect for how those approaches happen as well. Like, I was a lot faster when I was in middle school and early high school, and then I got bigger, and it wasn't great. But the point of that is that, like, I felt that my only use was my power and my ability to hit the ball far. And when I realized that, and my coaches, like, didn't trust me on the bases anyhow either. So I figured that if there's nobody on and there's two outs in an inning, why am I going to choke up on the bat? Because I could either ground out or strike out, the result's the same. And that was my mentality as a young person. And I think that, you know, a lot of people are in the game now that are my age.
Yes.
And they have that same approach.
Not trying to keep the inning alive, but with two outs trying to create instant offense.
No, mm-hmm. I mean, if we were like down a run in the 9th,
yes,
I would get on base. But like we're talking like the first inning, third inning of a game. Mm-hmm. I'm not trying to get on base. I'm trying to, because even if I get on base, my coaches didn't see me as much of a base threat anyhow.
Yeah, you're a clogger. Yeah.
I didn't think I was, to be honest with you. I loved running the bases, but they did.
I also think, and maybe this is just me hoping, that it's going to be cyclical, and now with the shift being banished, that you're going to start slowly seeing guys change their approach to find grass the way that they used to be able to, instead of, you know, how many times did Neil Walker ground to a second baseman who was playing 15 feet into the outfield,
right?
Or more specifically, a guy like Pedro Alvarez.
Right.
That's now gone. I'm hoping that cyclically it's going to be more about balls in play again. But I don't know that that's going to be the case. I look at it like the NBA. The NBA, is it the most aesthetically pleasing way to play basketball, shooting threes and going to the rim? I don't think so. I'm a little bit tired of it. But it's how you win.
Well, it's like football. I mean, it's every sport.
Yeah.
I mean, football, you're throwing the ball more.
Yeah.
I mean, we go back to that era, around the 2000 era, 98 to say 2002, every sport has changed.
Yes.
Every single sport has changed. Even hockey has changed. So, I think it's the evolution of sports and the details of sports and having to find better ways to do it whenever sometimes it's just black and white.
To your point, and it's a very good one, in 1998, just to pick a year, Brett Favre had 4,200 passing yards. Steve Young had 4,100. Nobody else had 4,000 passing yards. The league has totally changed.
Totally.
At least in the NFL, I feel like throwing the ball is popular with the fans.
Well, so is this stuff.
See, I don't know.
We just talked about that a couple months ago. You're like, I want to see exit velocity. I want to see, you know, the types of hits that we get, the miles per hour and all that stuff. I mean, that's what people, well, we think that people are into.
Sometimes I want to see a ball laced through the shortstop hole.
Yeah.
You know, McCutcheon, when he was MVP in 2013, he would rip the ball through that hole.
Right.
How many times did Tony Gwynn do that? They put the ball in play, action on the base paths, and instead it's turned into, they feel like the best way, they being all of baseball generally now, you win with on base, you win with hitting home runs, and it's the best thing for how you're going to win in modern baseball, the same way winning or hitting threes and defending the three is the best way to win in modern day basketball. But is that the most aesthetically pleasing in either regard? I don't think so. I do love exit velocity. I like that. But I would sacrifice exit velocity for, you know, players who put the ball in play and then stolen bases and things of that nature.
Yeah.
And I just think we've gone so far. I don't blame anybody for analytics, because you're trying to win. Their job is to win, not to make this a game that is digestible for the fans. They're not the commissioner of baseball, right?
Mm-hmm.
But as far as my eyes, and when the league average this year is 244 and last year was 239, that sucks.
There also has been a shift, and we talked about this a little as well, of paying attention more to OPS than average.
Yeah.
So, I don't know how much credence is lent to average anymore.
It's all about getting on, and it's all about how far you hit it.
Right. I mean, it's basically what we're talking about mm-hmm. right now. But like, now I pay more attention to OPS than average.
Absolutely.
So that's how the game has shifted.
And they start putting it on the score bug like 5 years ago.
Yes.
Where it used to be the Triple Crown stats.
Yeah, hits, home run, RBI.
Yeah, and now it's OPS. And I think we use it. It's mm-hmm. it's an easy way where you, okay, how good is this hitter? Bang, look at the OPS. It's crude, whatever, but that's how we look at it. If a guy's hitting 255, but he's got an OPS at 850, we're all like, hey, he's good.
Right.
It wasn't the case before. What do you make of this? At 412-928-9370, we can have a broader discussion with you. Why not? 412-928-9370 on the Fan Hotline, presented by Sullivan Super Service, Pittsburgh trusted plumbing and HVAC provider for over 50 years. 50-minute mark on the Fan, brought to you by South Hills Chrysler Dodge Jeep Ram, Route 19 in Peters Township, celebrating 50 years in the South Hills. Coming up in about 10 minutes, the Pirates lose the series. They lose the battle. Might they win the war? Oh, maybe. Tell you why I would phrase it that way coming up. But we're talking about the struggles in Major League Baseball as it relates to offense. Nobody is hitting. The batting average of the league is 244. It was 239 last year. And just to underscore the point, so the Pirates yesterday, they had Rowdy Tellez hitting fourth, 227. Then Oliveras, 224. Triolo, 209. Sawinski, 170. Grandal, 184. Taylor, 192. Jason DeLay, 083. Somehow the Rays were worse.
Mm-hmm.
Jackson, their catcher, 081. Their shortstop, 091. Their right fielder, 157. Their center fielder, 206. Their second baseman, 238. Randy Arozarena hitting 190. It's pathetic. And it's every team you play. I remember when they played the Cardinals a couple of weeks ago, and I thought, this is the Cardinals?
Right.
They got seven guys with OPSs in the 600s. Angela from Beachview wants to chime in. Hi, Angela.
Hi, guys. Well, baseball was my first love. The 71 Pirates, that was my team. But I've been saying this sort of thing all along, and it's all about the money. They want to get butts in seats and dumb it down. Nobody knows or cares about a hit and run, a suicide squeeze, or anything like that. It's all about the money. To me, the most telling statistic in baseball is runs produced. Runs scored plus ribbies minus homers. To me, that's where it counts. And it happens in football, too. They want to get butts in seats. The greatest, you know, show on earth with Kurt Warner back in those days. I mean, they changed the rule. You couldn't maul a wide receiver beyond 5 yards. They made the Mel Blount rule. Why? People want to see, you know, long bombs down the field. Because for the average fan who doesn't understand, they want to get butts in seats. To me, that's what it's all about.
Thank you, Angela. We got to let you run because we're up against it. But that's what you were saying in the last segment.
Yeah. I mean, it's every sport. I mean, you were talking about basketball. Then whenever we got off air, we're talking about even golf. I mean, everybody wants to see the long ball and everybody's changed the game. Like, I get the evolution of sports and you want to make it more entertaining and find different ways to play the game and kind of make it harder. But why does it have to be the rule?
Well, and here,
like, it's not a rule. It's just where it's gone. Why can't you just make it make sense?
Well, and to that end, the home runs are down this year, but this whole launch angle and this and that, right? To quote Zeiss and the other thing, like, chicks dig the long ball, but people like offense. And just because there's more home runs or had been more home runs doesn't mean that there's more offense. Case in point. We talked about the year 2000 and the batting average. The OPS that year was 782. On average, 782. The league average now is 704. So there's more home, again, not this year, but there has been more home runs, but there's not been more runs scored. Offense is popular. You've got to find a way to help offense grow. Not just the long ball, but offense. The NFL has at least figured that out. Passing leads to more scoring. More scoring, more butts in seats, more eyeballs on TVs. Home runs does not necessarily, when guys aren't getting on base, lead to more runs scored. You got to find a way to meld the two, I think.
Whew! I mean, there's individual players that we can name that have really transcended and changed the game into this. I mean, you think about Maguire Sosa. Ever since then, ever since that run of battling, baseball has changed year over year. You think about football, Peyton Manning throwing the football. You think about Steph Curry and shooting the threes. Like, there's the leagues have changed, but it's been player driven. If you really think about it, it's been player driven.
Yes,
there's been one or two players within a year that it'll show you that there's a different way to do it, and everybody's shifted that way.
Once they find the market inefficiency, then everyone else tries to do it, and then it no longer becomes a market inefficiency. It just becomes the way of doing business. And I think in each of these sports, it has led to, it's not as aesthetically pleasing, any of them, to me, as it used to be. All right, coming up next, the Buccos lose the series, but may they win the war? We'll get to that. Fan weather brought to you by Sun Chevy, 24 Silverado LT Crew Cab, up to $7,500 in rebates, full terms and qualifications at sunchevy.com.